UK Health Radio Podcast is the world's leading health conversation starter. 47 experts showcase all options of sickness prevention through lifestyle changes such as nutrition, reducing stress, sleep, breathing correctly, spending time in nature, meditation, fasting, as well as cultivating an attitude of gratitude and mindfulness. Our experts inform and animate you to take responsibility for your own health and well-being. You can choose from 42 weekly podcast episodes and be an active part of your health freedom. UK Health Radio Podcast, here for you and your well-being.
So hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Good Listening To Show. Today, just to let you know before we get underway, today is a special Legacy Life Reflections episode of the podcast, whereby you can gift the construct of the podcast to someone near, dear or close to you to record their story for posterity. If you'd like to get in touch to ask how this might help for someone near, dear or close to you, you can contact me about it at chris@secondcurve.uk. Enjoy the show. Welcome to a special Legacy Life Reflections episode of the Good Listening To podcast with me, Chris Grimes. A GLT with me, CG, is the podcast series that brings you The Clearing, where all good questions come to be asked and all good stories come to be told. And inspired by Shakespeare's All the World's a Stage, Legacy Life Reflections is where I invite my guests to The Clearing to ask, who are you? What's your story? What life's lessons learned along your way would you like to share with us? And whilst I've got you, what's your legacy? And how would you most like to be remembered? So yes, welcome to a special Legacy Life Reflections episode. And we're recording, please. Oh, yes, indeedy-doody. Welcome, welcome. Well, hang it all, thrice welcome to a special Legacy Life Reflections episode. Hurrah, of the Good Listening To Show. It all takes place energetically in the clearing or serious happy place of my guest's choosing. And as we now know, with the familiarity with the format, all the storytelling metaphors unpack from that sort of center point. So please welcome to the Good Listening To Show, Sarah Starkey is in the clearing. Woohoo!
Hello.
Hello, good morrow, Sarah. Now, Sarah has a very extraordinary life story and trajectory. You'll get onto this, but just to top and tell your timeline, what I know about you, you were born at a point when your father had just very recently been killed and shot down as a fighter pilot aboard a Mosquito Pathfinder. So you never knew your father. Wind forward to the other end of your timeline, and it's had a wonderful journey in amongst it all. You are an animal rights appassionado. You know, you absolutely are all over animal rights, partly because of your Andrew Tyler book that you're also here to talk about. But also the other extraordinary thing is you took the extremely brave decision to accompany your second husband, Andrew Tyler, to Dignitas, where you went with him to help him assisting in his assisted dying, but you came back without him. And then I know that your son Davey then went and did a separate trip to bring the ashes back. So there's lots of juicy, you know, extraordinary stuff for you to let your thinking unfold about. But I'm really intrigued to talk to you in this special Legacy Life Reflections and the lessons learned along your way that we're going to hear about. So you are extremely welcome, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
How was that for a genuine, for a bit of smoke blowing at you to position?
Well, it certainly tries to make me sound deeply interesting. I hope other people find me so, but obviously I think I'm quite interesting, but whether other people do really, I have no idea.
Well, it's an extraordinary inception point to think that you never met your father because he was shot down as a fighter pilot, and that's a very profound story. Just before we get you on the open road, do you want to say anything about that in terms of how I've positioned you?
Yes, I looked exactly like him. Funnily enough, I've turned into looking like my mother in my later years. It's really weird because he was very dark and not very fine featured, whereas my mother, very fine featured and very, very blonde. So he was Welsh, she's Scottish. My mother met, we'll call him Johnny because that's his name. And he was 23 when he was shot down, 4 days before his 24th birthday. He was shot down on the 14th of April. The war in Europe not in Japan, but the war in Europe ended on the 8th of May, and I was born on June the 8th. So basically, I was born a month after hostilities hopefully finished. I never knew him, and I always knew I had a different father. I don't know how it was told to me, but my start was a bit, I discovered when I was well into my 40s. People can't believe it, but I was the most timid, terrified, insecure person that you could ever meet. I genuinely would be one of these children who would hide behind their parents' skirt. Do you know what I mean? Yes. I wasn't sort of like my son, you know, out there, confident. I lived with my paternal grandparents. My grandfather was at my birth. He was the doctor, and my godmother was a doctor as well. And they were both there at my birth. I was born in his house. And then my mother got the news that Johnny had definitely died. Up to then, it had been, you know, presumed dead, you know, one of those telegrams. And being her, she was convinced he hadn't died because his head was very thick, she said. You know, when somebody threw a bottle at him once and it didn't hurt him, apparently. I saw this in a diary she wrote. So I don't know why, but she thought he could manage to get out of a you know, plane on fire falling from the sky. Anyway, he was buried in Germany by a German.
And did you have the full regalia of a couple of uniformed officers from the RAF arriving at your mother's front door?
I don't know. Don't know. I certainly saw a fantastic letter when a few of his friends went to see the place he'd actually fallen from the sky and take his helmet and his farmer had, you know, put on a cross and all that sort of stuff. And he was eventually buried in, I can't remember which, you know, one of the many, many sad graveyards where you see very many hundreds, if not thousands of crosses, which is very, you know, hard to see. Anyway, the difficult part was, and I don't know if my family, and I never knew this until I was well into my 40s when my godmother told me, because I always wondered why I was so timid and everything else. And it so happened that I stayed with my paternal grandparents for the first year of my life. My mother, once she knew Johnny was dead, she rushed off back to Scotland. And basically, I was left for a year with these two grandparents who absolutely adored me, because obviously I'm their dead son's child.
Of course. And for the record, he's Johnny Pennant. He's not one of
the Johnny Pennant. Carries. That's my real last name, Pennant. And anyway, I didn't discover this until, as I say, my godmother said to me, "You were so sad, Sarah, when your mother came and just took you away." So.
And your mother presumably just was dealing with the grief, but went off to try and find normal.
Well, yeah, and then she remarried. She'd remarried within that year, came back and just whipped me away to Africa.
And this is Johnny Bolton, who became your stepfather and who was later.
Zed Bolton, yes. He was John Bolton, and he was always known as Zed.
Zed, right.
And so I was whipped off to Africa, and in quick succession, my mother had three more daughters. And I don't know if that was first year and being whipped away and my mother not having the right kind of empathy, understanding or whatever. I became very, very nervous, and she'd always tell me when I was growing up, "Oh, Sarah, you're always so jealous of Susu." I wasn't. I was obviously a very disturbed tiny child.
Sort of displaced because of the tragedy of the beginning.
Well, I loved these two grandparents as my own, and then suddenly I'm taken away from them. Yes. Not like down the road, but literally, you know, to the other side of the world. Anyway, so we lived in what was called the Gold Coast, then now Ghana, Before that, we lived in the Sudan. Two of my sisters were born there. Then we moved to Ghana, where my third sister, who you know, Katie, was born. And then we all came back to England. I'm now nearly 10. And we had a year in America as well, where I was very unhappy. I hadn't learnt to read or write. Mm-hmm. I remember my mother, I can still remember her. She got all the books from England to teach us to read and write. And because we didn't grasp straight away any of the, you know, the structures of reading and writing, she just got angry, threw the books on the floor, and that was the end of that. So
as if they can teach you themselves by being there as objects.
Well, I think she just didn't have the sort of that kind of patience.
Yes. You know, not everyone can be a teacher, of course, absolutely.
Well, yes, you'd think you sort of accept the fact your children can't actually read and write if they've never seen reading and writing, you know. Anyway, so we came back, and for some reason my mother decided, my mum and stepdad, to put me in a boarding school. And I was put in this Catholic with proper nuns dressed in the whole gear. All I did was cry. I just cried all the time. I remember I'm a very insecure little girl. Anyway, so apparently they were going to go to Australia and I was going to be left in this boarding school. Anyway, they decided in the end to go to America, and I was for some reason allowed to go as well. So we all went to America for a year before coming back here to the UK for good. My parents still went on going to Africa and then the Middle East. And what my mother would do is, now she knew I'd got so hysterical, obviously, about going to boarding school, so none of us were going to be sent to boarding school. So we used to have friends of my parents come and look after us while my mother spent, say, 6 months out in Africa or Asia with Zed. And we'd have different people come to look after us, all with different rules.
So they're all wrestling with geography decisions as to where they're going to base themselves. There are five, I think there are five children in total, including...
Yes, Johnny came, he came 13 years after me.
And I do know I know them as Les Sœurs Anglais, Les Sœurs Anglaises, which is Katie, Susu, and of course, those that I have met in France, and I also know Reg Starkey very well as well, and it's his name that you've kept as your marital name as well.
Yes.
I know.
So I just was basically very, very unhappy as a youngster and a teenager. Very.
And if I may, what I'd quite like to do is pull you into the structure of this, because we're...
Yes, of course.
So that some of this can come out in the route map of what we're doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
let me get you going on the open road of welcoming you to the clearing. So first of all, where do you go? What is, where is, metaphorically or literally, a clearing for you, Sarah Starkey?
Well, every day I have, at the moment, I did have five. One died 3 months ago. I have four rescue dogs, all barring one, old. And I have, since having rescued my first dog coming up for 40 years ago, go every single day of my life basically to the woods. And when I lived in London, and luckily in Hampstead, I was on the heath every day. But yes, I go to the woods every day, and that's my saving grace in a way. That's where you know, you do your downtime, you know, decompress and what have you. And I've had 28 rescue dogs over the years.
Gosh.
And they've basically all been fine, and we go off and we do our own thing. And now they're older, I only do an hour. We used to be an hour and a half. And I just absolutely love trees, love woods. And they shade you in the summer, and they keep the rain off in the winter. And
And there's a lovely metaphor there about not seeing the wood for the trees, but how to see the wood from the trees is go into the woods and enjoy the trees. And I love that. And the convoluted, you know, complex, wicked mess trajectory of life, you find sanctuary by returning to the woodlands and the trees. So trees always give you succor.
Oh, definitely. And they are my gods, quite literally. Every day I put my hand on one tree or other and say, thank you very much for everything you've given me. And thank you for the weather. Thank you for allowing me to be living here and not in Afghanistan or somewhere like that. And I then ask for the trees to, I've got a list of people who aren't as lucky as I am health-wise. And I ask, you know, please make them be all right. And, you know,
so
please don't let me be in a car crash.
And I'm imagining you with several dogs on several leads, or maybe they've all gone feral. I'm not
well, sure. Normally they'll all be off, but I've got, well, one of them is, she's so old, my Lucy, that basically the last, 3 months, she's not really, we can take her up for a quarter of an hour. But the two other elderly rescues, I've only had one just nearly a year and the other one 6 months, one of whom is deaf, got cataracts, and so she has to be on a lead. Freddie, who I've had for a year, he's 15 and a half, he's deaf as well, and he'd be off like a bat out of hell, you know. He doesn't look back. So
deaf bat out of hell. You know, where am I going?
and Lucy, who's always been off a lead, I've had her 4 years and she's at least 16 now. But she now needs to be on a lead because of her sight's basically gone. Her hearing's definitely gone. And she might look around and not see me and then start off in another direction. So, but my little Hazel, who's a rescued from being a breeding machine, who is a nervous wreck most of the time, she's fine off a lead. After the first 6 months, I've had her a year. She's just brilliant off a lead and hangs around me, you know. So, and I take a friend's dog, a rescue greyhound, and she's off fine off a lead. So I have two off a lead and three on. And except you also, I don't really take Lucy now.
And you are really committed to animal welfare in the sense you also travel each week quite a long distance to go to an animal sanctuary, don't you? And I wonder.
Oh, it's one of my great joys, yes.
And I wondered whether you had a complete menagerie of mayhem, but it's just dogs by the sound of it. Because when someone's real act, okay, so tell me what you have in your menagerie.
No, me personally. Oh, in the past I've had rescued rats, rescue mice, rescue guinea pigs, rescue tortoises. I often have, and people bring me birds if they've been damaged or what have you. And I've just been able to let one go last week, which was really exciting, who was in a terrible nick. And somebody, you know, said, can you take him in? So I called him Alan and cleaned up his eye, got the right medication for his eye, which is for humans as well. So,
and what was Alan? He's a bird, is he?
Yes, he was a pidgey. He was a feral pidgey.
Alan the feral pidgey. And by the way, I remember in the book about your Andrew Tyler's book, My Life as an Animal, one of the pivotal moments that got him so profoundly into animal welfare was a bird twonking into a glass pen and then him seeing its helplessness as it landed in a doorway.
That's it. So we had a pidgey, Phil.
we could be going down a rabbit hole if we're going to just talk about individual animals.
I was just going to say, we had him for 6 years.
Lovely. So,
what
was that name? It was Alan the Pidgey, the feral Pidgey. And who was that one?
Oh, well, I've had many, but Philly was the one who lived full time.
I love the fact you personalise them, give them names, and then.
Oh, good God, yes.
Yes, and I think I'd be inclined to call one Derek or Dave. That's just me.
No, why not? I've called many, many very different names, and the name of the person who's rescued them, I'll say, what's your name? They'll say Rosie or Tracy or whatever, so the bird becomes that while they're with me.
And the comedian in me would like to have a racing pigeon called Dave. So you go, God, Dave, as he sort of flies over the sky. Anyway, listen, I don't want to get into rabbit hole about that. So, and that's another animal. You might have saved some rabbits as well. So we're in your clearing. We're in the woods. The trees are your gods. So now it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, first of all. So let's go into shaping in the canopy of your trees. So what are the main four things that have shaped you, Sarah Scott?
Well, as I say, the first 20 years I could well do without in many ways, But the good shaping, because that was sort of bad shaping, the good shaping was, and it's going to sound corny, but Reggie coming into my life. And he turned me into a very much more secure person. And he told me I wasn't stupid, because my mother was always telling me I was stupid. And Reggie said, no, you're not remotely stupid. And it's amazing what a boost that gives you.
When you meet the right person who sees you for who you are, what you are, and appreciates you for all of those things.
Well, it's very hard being told you're an idiot all the time. And so it was amazing. And he started teaching me that I didn't have to obey my mother. Because he was a confident person. I mean, I'll just give you one example. We went down when Davy was probably 9 months old, something like that. And we were staying in the pub quite near the house. And my mother and I had a row. We were always rowing because I think quite differently from her. And she was telling me how wars were a good idea. I was horrified. She said, well, it gets rid of the riffraff.
Oh, okay.
And this so shocked me. And I'm crying and everything. Anyway, we went back to the pub. And I said, I want to go home. And Rich said, well, we will. I said, but we can't. We're at my mother's. He said, we can do what we like. You know, we're grown-ups. We can do what we... So we got in the car, packed everything up, put Davy in, obviously, you know, in the back, and drove back to London. You know, and he taught me to dare say no to her, which I'd never done, you know.
So it's a way of extricating the shadow of your parents when there was over control. So this was you finding your confidence and your stride. Because there's a really happy irony now where I experience you in the time that I've known you as being very strident and very opinionated about, on obviously, animal welfare. And Andrew Tyler also gave you great confidence too in that regard. But I love the fact that Reg is there as a real sort of first angel, if you like, to sort of get
Path. Yes, he definitely was, because the very first thing was we were married in the June 67. And then my mother said, oh, you know, you come for Christmas. And I thought, no, I don't want to come for Christmas. I've seen so many people who feel obliged to go to, you know, the parents 1 year, the in-laws the next. They always look, you know, grim about it. And I think, I don't want to do any of that. And so my mother phoned. She was obviously nervous as well. And I'm talking to her, but she's talking about Christmas. And Reg just took the phone from me and said, we're not coming Christmas Day. So she burst into tears and all that. But that was another hurdle that we got over. So I've never had to do the in-law thing of going to someone's house that you don't want to go to on Christmas Day.
Yes, and that's very liberating for the rest of the world. You can go where you like on Christmas Day. It's your Christmas, be where you like.
You know, I mean, people can invite us for a drink or whatever, but I don't want to pack up. I don't want to, you know. So after that, that was...
And that maternal control of its day and of its time is very much the thing. Of course, now, you know, with hindsight, we all know that we need to all control our own destiny, or others will control it for us. Easier said than done, because family setups and the sort of the politics within are incredibly complex, I know.
Yes, yes. So the next person was Andrew.
And this is Andrew Tyler, yeah.
Andrew Tyler, who I married in... Well, I met in 1978 and we lived for 10 years together before getting married, but we were married, if you know what I mean, all that time. And he was an extraordinarily brave man. I do admire people who are brave and stand up and be counted. And most of us are timid and do what we're told. You know, that's why the Third Reich happened, because people don't stand up and be counted. And these are why these things happen. And Davy got very, very sick. The GP guessed straight away he had appendicitis. So he went to a teaching hospital. I won't name it. Basically, they nearly killed him. 3 days, they would not believe he had appendicitis. And he did nearly die. It was horrendous. He looked like something out of Belsen. He was in such terrific pain. They kept saying, oh, no, he's got constipation. I kept saying, no, he hasn't. And it was due to Andrew, in my opinion, that Davy's still alive, because we refused to leave the hospital. I thought they would get the police and we'd be thrown out because we just refused to leave. One or t'other of us was there for the 24 hours, day and night. And we were so despised and hated until we were taking up room and this, that, and the other. Oh, it was awful. And anyway, day three, they did operate. And 10 days later, I mean, he was really ill. He was there for 10 days with massive doses of antibiotics because I presume they'd given him peritonitis anyway. And it was Andrew daring. He always dared stand up to authority, whereas I'm terribly middle class. And basically, you know, you should obey the rules, whatever the rules are, even if it's going to kill your child sort of thing.
And again, that comes back by the sound of it to maternal influencing, whereas the two main protagonists then that have shaped you are those that are encouraging to be more strident, more assertive, more definite about your own needs, wants, desires, beliefs.
Well, I don't think they were even encouraging me. I was just watching, you know, like one does, and admiring people who stand up for themselves.
And that pulls you towards a new case. And that pulls you towards a new capability in oneself,
yes,
as well.
Definitely, definitely.
Notice what you find attractive in others.
Because it's very difficult. I'm very, very middle class. You know, you don't break the rules. Basically, you do, you know, you do what the system tells you to do. You accept the status quo.
And ultimately, conformity comes at its own cost as well, because that inhibits everything. Absolutely.
Yes.
So still in the shaping. So there's one or two other things to shape you. I just need to make sure that we bounce along the structure of this.
Right. So the other things I suppose that have shaped me was becoming a vegan. And I worked in a school. Don't ask me how I became a vegan. But
I won't.
I'd never seen any horrible videos. I'd never seen a horrible anything. I just knew eating animals was wrong. Mm-hmm. And Andrew wasn't ready to be a vegan. So Davy was really sick in hospital. I learnt that you are less likely to have appendicitis being a vegan. I've no idea if that's true or not. So I thought, okay, I'm opposed to animal abuse of any sort while eating them, which is ridiculous, but that's how we all are programmed. And the summer of Davy being really sick, we were in Scotland and Andrew just said, I'm ready. So we became vegans.
So that was a big shaping in life choice and then, you know, allied to animal welfare as well. So veganism is one of the great shapings.
Yes. And the other shape was my friend Annie. I worked in a school in the play centre, you know, the after school. I initially did it as a volunteer and then I was good at it. I'm good with children. And so they took me on as a salaried person. And I saw all these gerbils looked after very, very poorly. They were being bred all over the place. They were being left in tanks and hot windowsills and everything. So I tackled the school about that. And
The school gerbil was a thing, wasn't it? I remember that in my growing up. That it was one of the sort of pets that were always around within schools whenever they had not necessarily a biology lab. I mean, something to just give people the opportunity to, you know, relate to an animal.
To abuse animals.
Well intended, but very badly executed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, really. Anyway, the fact remains that I said, you better do something about this. Get them out that window. Clean them more often, etc. And they said, oh, they're very happy gerbils. And I said, no. So I got in touch with the authorities, the LEA or whatever it was called, the London education thing, the science department, who obviously thought I was mad. And The next thing, I was dragged in by the head teacher and the deputy head and screamed at for daring to go to the authorities, and lost my job there. But I was so good at what I did that the Camden Council found me another school to go and work in. So I had phoned the RSPCA about it and the youth department, and she just basically negated any responsibility and said, oh, you want to get in touch with Annie? And I said, oh, who's Annie? And she said, oh, she's fantastic. She's into animal rights. So that was how I got into animal rights proper. Because she lived down, I lived in Hampstead and she happened to live in Belfast. And she was amazing. She went into schools teaching children about farming and everything, and teaching everybody how being a vegan. She looked amazing as well. She was fabulous. She'd been a showgirl and gone on and worked on the cruise ships as a singer and actress, etc. And so I got roped in that way. And before I knew it, they were saying to me, because there was a group there, you know, and every Thursday or whatever, once a month, I can't remember, we'd have a meeting. And there was an act to come out called the Animal Scientific Procedures Bill 1986, I think it was. And David Meller was bringing this out. In other words, you could vivisect animals more than once. So you could really cause terrible torment to an animal, and then you could use them again. This was this new act was going to allow. So we went, you know, we were like, I don't know, 12 middle-aged elderly ladies. We'd go around with our sign all around Parliament Square every Sunday.
And I, by the way, the comedian me has to ask, when Camden Council gave you the new job, were you introduced to Annie as being officer in charge of gerbil welfare?
No. Annie had nothing to do with... No, that was an aside. I happened to go... Annie...
And is she still with us, by the way? Annie is still...
No, she went to Dignitas 7 months later after Andrew.
Oh, blimey. Okay.
And she worked at Animal Aid as well.
Sorry, just to keep the structure going as well.
Yes.
We've done shaping now. Can we now talk about three things that have inspired you? And there could be some overlap, obviously, because obviously animals are really core to your belief system as well.
Well, the three things that really inspire me, I wrote down, well, a nice thing is trees and plants and all that. The resilience and bravery of animals. Mm-hmm. And the bravery of certain human beings. I'm amazed with all the dogs I've had, and many of them have had really, really horrible lives. They wish to make the most of what they have left.
Yes, dogs do have this extraordinary, a bit like the clock of now, they're ever present. The moment is now, 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 now.
Not always, not always, but they try and do their best, like my little Hazy. I mean, she spent 5 years being a breeding machine, kept in a cage. Whether she'll ever get over the trauma of that, I don't know. Mm-hmm. She finds human beings very scary. But she obviously loves me and I love her and everything's, you know, but she still has funny ways. But they do try to make the most of things. And the bravery of certain humans, I'll give you a couple of examples. I wrote them down. For instance, I think, because I know he gets nervous about what he does. Peter Tatchell. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been hit by authorities and God knows, you know, people in the street hundreds of times. He's campaigned. He's had the Daily Mail hate him for this, that and the other. You know, do you know Benny Rothman?
No.
He was part of just a working class guy who was very short. He was only 5 foot something. He died recently. He trespassed Kinder Scout when it was all private. Everything used to be completely private. You know, ramblers couldn't go. Because of people like him, we now have open spaces we can go to. You couldn't before.
And what was his name? Benny Rothman, did you say?
Benny Rothman. Do look him up. He's fantastic. Went to prison, did all these things. And he
and is that part of a sort of cigarette empire as well, or am I making that up?
Cigarette empire.
Because of Rothman.
Oh, no, he was just a working class bloke.
No, nothing to do with that.
In the Peak District, you know, he just... And he'd see this gorgeous mountain behind him, Kinder Scout, which you weren't allowed to go up because the tops, you used it for whatever they... Killing animals, I presume.
Sure.
You know, you weren't allowed. So, you know, he'd organise these mass trespasses. And that's very brave.
So the right to roam, access to trees and also animal rights are the real influences that I'm hearing.
Yes, it's and someone like Harriet, I wrote her name down because I couldn't remember her last name, Tubman, who was an escaped slave in 1858, I think it was.
Harriet Tubman, did you say?
Tub, T-U-B man.
Yeah.
She was an escaped slave from the South. She went and she, I don't know if you've heard about the Underground Railway, where she would help other slaves. It wasn't an actual railway. It wasn't, you know, but to get away from the South to freedom, to Canada and what have you. People who would have been...
It sounds very filmic. Is there a film about her as well? So people.
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. Other than it's people like that that
yes.
Have really come up against it.
Yes.
That's why I'm so ashamed of people like middle class people like me who sort of go, "Ooh, wasn't I brave? I went around Parliament Square with a placard." You know, it's pathetic in comparison. And the one last one I'll mention is John Lewis. Again, he's recently died. He was a senator and he fought for years and years and years in the States to try and get it's called the John Lewis Act, whereby, and unfortunately it's reverting back to the old bad days, to get more black people allowed to vote and the poor to vote and the elderly to vote, you know, because I don't know if you know, but in many states, if you were a black person, you were allowed to, quote, vote, but you had to speak French. Well, most slaves can't speak French. Most Americans can't speak French. I can't speak French. You know, so this was a way to stop people. And, you know, every single Republican would not get that through, while every single Democrat got it through eventually, but it's reverting back, unfortunately. But he died, I think, last year. People like that, amazing. You know, black man actually getting into the Senate and what have you, you know, from 1920s,
30s. Yes.
I'm full of admiration for these people.
Thank you. And now, two things that never fail to grab your attention. It may be implicit in what you've been giving us anyway, but these are the squirrels of distraction. A borrow from the film are, oh, squirrels, you know, what never fails to grab your attention. I don't doubt it's going to be animal related, but what never fails to grab your attention, Sarah Starkey?
Well, cruelty or unkindness or whatever. If I saw somebody in the street, you know, I would now tackle them, that kind of thing. That you know, I've done that quite a few times, you know. Unfortunately, the other thing that grabs me is the computer. I can't help looking at YouTube and looking at the latest, because I'm very political, looking at this, that. I spend too much time like that, you know.
So I wish Pandora's box of distraction is the computer.
It's really, you know, and Andrew and I didn't have a television for, well, I haven't even now, I haven't had a television for over 25 years on account of it's horribly distracting, you know, and you sort of think, oh, I won't look, and then you sort of go, oh, I'll go and do so and so, and you start out the room, but you can't. That's why I'm a radio girl. I have a radio in every room, because A, I'm very political, I listen to all the political stuff.
Yeah.
And B, you can carry on doing other things if you're listening to a radio, which you can't.
Like podcasts too, you can do something as a sort of happy distraction whilst you're also listening to a podcast, absolutely. And so, because of your obviously your love of animal rights, obviously the internet for you is a rabbit hole. See what I did there? It's sort of Alice in Wonderland,
yes.
Getting stuck beneath.
And unfortunately, much I see is just so distressing.
Yes,
because it's all sent to me, you know, because everybody, you know, horrible stuff.
And now I think we're on to a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
that I'm basically very cowardly.
Wow, there's a happy irony in that, because you sound very strident and very, you know, obviously very opinionated about what you feel really strongly about.
Yes.
So I think there's an interesting sort of conditioning shadow of your tricky start, is what I'm hearing, and you've been trying to escape from getting out from that shadow ever since. But you know, this day you are very strident, opinionated, helpful, leaning in to help animals. You know, we haven't got onto this yet, but the extraordinary bravery in, you know, supporting someone as they go towards Dignitas. So now we're going to leave the shaking of the tree. We're staying in the clearing. We're moving away from the tree, and we're going to talk about alchemy and gold now. When you're at purpose and in flow, Sarah Starkey, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
Well, there are two things. I absolutely adore gardening. It's hard work. You have to be ruthless, because I've only got a small garden. But my garden is, everyone would say, is by far the best in the street. I'm dedicated to my garden. And the other thing is working at the sanctuary. I absolutely love it. I'm meeting like-minded people. I'm meeting people who are amazing.
What's the name of the sanctuary, Sarah, that you work at?
It's called The Retreat. And Billy Thompson, who's run it since, he's in his mid-50s now, and he is... always been into animals, and then he started, you know, a sanctuary, and then they moved to this ex-farm, you know, which had barns and everything else and land, and he and his husband opened it. It's open to the public. There's a vegan cafe. Well, it's a restaurant, really. And I work in the... I'm a born waitress. I was an air hostess for a bit, and I worked in wine bars and stuff.
And by the way, it sounds like it's a spiritual home for you, because there's the vegan bar there. There's also the animals to take care of. So you found your niche. You found the sanctuary for you, because it has everything that you need to be concentrating on there for you.
And people of like mind.
Exactly.
And it's just... it's amazing. The food is amazing. I meet people. I chat to them because I'm a great talker. I can take all my dogs with me, which I've acquired from there. My dad, you know, there are horses.
I love that. They can't give them away, because you keep bringing them back. The animals that you go and rescue, you bring them back when you come and work there. And if I may, I just want to keep going with the structure so we don't overrun too much, if that's all right. So now I'm going to award you with a cake. And this is, rather than splotching it in your face, first of all, do you like cake, Sarah Starkey?
I don't eat anything sweet.
Okay.
I don't want to be fat. I have an obsession about not being fat. And most of the British public are, and I don't want to be one of them.
So would you like something savoury instead?
Yes. Something, again, I don't eat because I would be addicted to them, is kettle crisps.
Fine, so you're going to get a packet of kettle crisps with the cherry on
lovely.
The cake.
Thank
no
you.
One's ever done that before. So the cherry on the cake is now the final metaphor. You know, it's the idea of what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future. It could be what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given. Notes, help or advice to a younger version of yourself with the gift of hindsight. And then what we're cranking up to, and if you look at my Zoom background, there's Shakespeare in the canopy too.
I've got it, because I think it's very, very true. And as I say, the names I read out about Peter Tatchell, Benny Rothman, Harriet Tubman, etc. It's from...
You're going for the quote, first of all, aren't
you? You know Margaret Mead?
No, not personally.
No, she died recently, but she said... Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And there's a lot of truth in that.
There is. Margaret Mead, just say that once again, just to sort of let that lovely quote hang there.
Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, It's the only thing that ever has.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Best piece of advice? Carry on, carrying on, I suppose. I mean, that's all I could. I can't really think of the...
That's brilliant. Stick with what you first said.
You know, be kind, it's easy, which is Billy's saying at the sanctuary. And Andrew's was, why be cruel when you can be kind?
Beautiful, really lovely. And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players, we're going to talk about legacy finally and how, when all is said and done, Sarah Starkey, you would most like to be remembered.
Oh, well, obviously, as this amazingly kind, wonderful human being who spoke truth to power. But if people remember me as being kind, would be nice. I think being kind is what does make the world go round in the end. Empathy is there are lots of people who poo-poo it. I don't. I think, you know, if you can empathise, you don't leave the poor behind, which, of course, they are being all the time.
Yes.
You know, injustice, equality. I believe in those, you know, get rid of injustice, you know, get equality. And things like saying, you know, we're all equal before the law. I don't know why lies like that are told. It's not true. You know, it's just not true. If you're the richer you are, the more likely you'll get off. I don't care what anybody says. That's the truth of it. And if you've got a white face, you're more likely to get off it than a black one, et cetera, et cetera. I hate lies, in other words, yes, and hypocrisy.
Now, you're very, very profoundly principled, and that's come across really, really clearly. And finally, I know there is your husband's book by Andrew Tyler. You may or may not want to talk. There it is, the book. It's My Life as an Animal by Andrew Tyler. And where else can we find out anything about you if we wanted to find out more on the internet?
The book you can get from Animal Aid.
Yeah.
And Reggie has been fantastic.
Reg Starkey, yeah.
I mean, a lot of people find this odd that an ex-husband is, you know, been pushing for my present husband, you know, the one who's just died, obviously. But he had it made into an audio book, and it is fantastic. And I think you can get it on something called... I think you can get it on audio something or other.
Audible, I think it is.
Is that what it's called? Yes.
And then, by the way, just to let listeners know, Reg Starkey has recorded a dedicated episode about Andrew Tyler, My Life as an Animal, which Reg very generously, and I know there's profound connection to you because you were mother to Reg's son, Davey, and Andrew took care of him as his stepfather. So that's, I think, why, you know, it's a beautiful act of saying thank you. Reg has serialised the book posthumously and dedicated it to that cause. So, yes, please do look up Andrew Tyler, My Life as an Animal, a memoir of adventures, music and animal rights.
So, and do remember that Andrew was a journalist
before
he took over Animal Aid. He's the most fantastic writer. And the book is amazing because he was a rock writer for NME. It makes my life sound actually so boring when you think, see my Andrew's life. Worth reading.
And finally, as this has been your moment in the sunshine about you, Sarah Starkey, is there anything else briefly you'd like to say?
Well, obviously, I wish everybody would stop eating animals. Simple as that. Kindness is easy, really.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the supremely wise and principled Sarah Starkey. I've been Chris Grimes. This has been The Good Listening Show. Thank you very much indeed, Sarah, and good night. You've been listening to The Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye. So, Sarah, you've just had a good listening to in the Good Listening To show. What was your experience of going through this structure and this process?
I loved it, because you're very disciplined and I can't half rattle on. And you kept bringing me back to the road as I drift off to the sides. And you're very charming with it. You're very kind and gracious. You are a born communicator and you do it very, very well. I could never do what you're doing. People think it's easy interviewing people. I know, I just know it isn't.
That's very kind of you to say. And as this has been a sort of legacy life reflections serial episode, what do you think about the idea of using this to help people record their story for posterity?
Well, I think everyone should do it. Everyone's got a story. And they're all very, very different. Yes, I think everyone should. I just find people interesting, you know, and when somebody's talking on the radio and you think, oh, I'm not going to listen to this. And then you start listening, think, oh, yes, they did that, you know, if they're on Desert Island or Discs, yes, or whatever. And you think, oh, that I hadn't thought about that. And you and it opens your mind to other people. Of course, they're going to be people you loathe and think, God, they're awful.
And by the mentioning Desert Island Discs, the two things, the Desert Island Discs thing, this is obviously Desert Island Discs, but in a clearing and with stories rather than music. And yes, the idea of giving everyone a damn good listening to was the founding premise of this, because everybody's interesting and you can make ordinary lives extraordinary by giving them a good listening to, is the sort of premise of this, really.
Yes, definitely.
So my thanks to Sarah Starkey. And if you too may be interested in gifting the structure of the Good Listening To show around someone near, dear or close to you to record your own or their own legacy life reflections episode, just to remind you, it can be either a public or a private podcast for you to distribute as you would most like to do. And you also get a film of the interview too. So more information is care of the Second Curve website at www.secondcurve.uk. Or you can contact me directly by email, chris@secondcurve.uk. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for listening and goodbye.